You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, everybody. It is Tuesday, April 23rd. 2024, and it is indeed a heck of a morning. We are live once again on the MMA Fighting Twitter space. You hear the show in its entirety shortly thereafter on the MMA Fighting Podcasting Network. What's going on, everybody? I am Mike Heck. Great to be back. First show we have done here in, I think, exactly 2 weeks. We did one the Tuesday before UFC 300. There's just so much going on that we couldn't do one the Thursday. I was traveling to Vegas on Friday, and then we had obviously UFC 300 on Saturday, flew home, did on to the next one Sunday night, and then we did BTL on Tuesday, smack dab in the middle of my time off. It was my kid's birthday. He was off from school, so wanted to have some family time for the week. But now we're back, and we haven't really reacted to anything since UFC 300, but when it ended was unbelievable. The watch party was incredible. And I mean, what can we say? It was so good. UFC had an off week this past weekend, which was great. Give us some time to digest everything that happened at UFC 300. Dana White took a little bit of a victory lap, calling out media members. And if you told me that Dana White was going to take media members out of context for his own good, I would have been like, come on, what are you talking about? He would never do such a thing. But that's pretty much what he did. And take that victory lap. What can I say? Go ahead and take that victory lap. But the UFC is back this weekend. I think this is Vegas 91. Maybe it's 92. I don't even know. I think it's Vegas 91. But we got an Apex card. There's some decent fights on here. Mateus Nicolau, Alex Perez, the main event. We got Ryan Spann versus Bogdan Guskov. Karine Silva, Ariane Lipski. It's a really good fight at 125. Janata Dinez versus Austin Lane. JSP, Jonathan Pierce versus David Onama. Tim Means versus Uros Medic. Hadi Yaya versus Victor Henry. It's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. Austin Hubbard versus Michael Fieglak. Dontel Mays versus Caio Machado. That was going to be a heavyweight over if there ever was one. Ketlin Souza versus Marnik Mann. James Lontop versus Chris Padilla. Ivana Petrovic versus Na Liang. And Mahashata Hayasar versus Gabriel Benitez. So that is UFC Vegas 91. Well, we got Knuckle Mania this weekend, which I'm super excited about. Mike Perry versus Thiago Alves, the main event for that card. Hopefully the MMA Fighting brass can hear me when I say, please put me on BKFC duty, because that card's going to be great. All right, let's get to this. There's a lot of people waiting, so let's rapid fire these bad boys. We can talk about whatever you want, because we got a couple weeks to catch up upon. So, eeny, meeny, 4 ounce sniper.
Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, heck of a morning. How you been?
Good, man. You?
Pretty good. I'm at work driving around right now. I'm glad you went live. I don't know, maybe the last live, I think you announced that you might be taking a little bit of a break, but I missed that one. So I thought you just disappeared on us, Mike. I'm like, what was going on? But yeah, like I said, I'm glad you're back. I just wanted to say happy Liang Na fight week. One of my favorite female MMA fighters. She refuses to go to a decision, I think, in the past like 6 years or so. So anybody looking to gamble or make some money on that, that fight's not going the distance. She's kill or be killed. But outside from that, I wanted to ask you, Aljamain Sterling, do you think the UFC is going to do him any favors as far as pushing closer to the title? Or do you think that performance against Calvin Kattar is going to sort of hold him back? Because it wasn't the most fan-friendly, I guess, performance, but honestly, it was a smart performance. I was rooting for Calvin, but I can't hate on it. He went out there, dominated, and got it done. So what are your thoughts on that, Mike? Heck of a morning.
It's tough to say. I mean, Dana did say nice things about Aljo after the victory, which isn't something that happens all that often these days. But look, is if there's one fight at UFC 300 that I will probably never watch again, it'll be that one. And that's not to say that Aljamain didn't dominate Calvin Kattar. I mean, you know what? Max Holloway just kind of put the wood to Calvin Kattar, but Calvin was able to at least get some offense off in that fight. Calvin wasn't able to do anything in this fight. He literally did nothing. And I think I would say 80% of that is due to what Aljamain Sterling did. And I think 20% of it was Calvin Kattar just did nothing. And I think after that first round, I think he was a little bit frustrated. And as soon as he got taken down in round two, you could just see the frustration on his face. Kept looking at the referee saying, when are we going to separate this? When are we going to get stand-ups? Didn't happen all that often. And Aljamain dominated. I mean, it was a dominant performance. It was exactly what he needed. And it was very smart. If he stood there and tried to throw hands with Calvin Kattar for 15 minutes, he would have gotten knocked out. And he knows that. So it was a fine performance. Is he going to jump the line? Hell no. Is he going to jump over Volkanovski or Max Holloway? Zero chance of that happening. He called out Brian Ortega. I think Ortega's ahead of him in this conversation after the win over Yair. I think Mavzar-Evloev is the right fight. And I've been saying this since they booked this fight with Calvin Kattar. If he wins, they're just going to throw him in there with Mavzar. And the way the UFC views this is a contender is going to emerge. And the way they kind of see it is one of the – and I don't even know why Mavzar gets such flack, because I thought the Arnold Allen fight was pretty fun. He hurt Arnold Allen on the feet in that fight. It was kind of weird how that all played out. But to call that one of the most boring fights he's ever seen on a card that was awful outside of the main event was just – I still don't think Dana White was talking about the same fight, if we're being honest. But yeah, the Mavzar fight is perfect. It's perfect. Mavzar is not going to just accept Aljamain Sterling taking him down and just holding him down. He's not going to. So I think that's the fight to make. I like that fight. And I think it's what the UFC is going to do. Makes sense. Mavzar wants it. Aljo seems fine with it. I don't think he's going to get the Brian Ortega fight. So there you go. That's how I feel this will all work. And featherweight's great. It's just a deep load division. Aljo's going to have to win, like, if he beats Mavzar, he's still going to have to win, like, another fight or two before he gets title shot. That's just what this division looks like right now. Brain, go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Mike. Just wondering what you think about Charles Oliveira fighting Max Holloway for the BMF belt. I think that'd be sick. I think Volk is probably going to end up fighting Topuria just because of the fact that he's done so much for the company, coming on short notice and giving them good fights. So I think they're probably going to give him Topuria. And then I don't want to really see Justin Gaethje or Charles Oliveira too. Like, I just think Justin Gaethje's going to get choked out again and or just beat. I don't think he's as good as he was when they first fought, especially after that KO. And yeah, just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
I want to see Max Holloway, Charles Oliveira. I definitely want to see that fight. I feel like we didn't really get it for real the first time around because it ended in such a strange way. But I would love to see it. Just it doesn't make any sense right now. Like, Charles is over and he's a star and people love him, but from a merit perspective and just kind of where both guys are going right now, Max is like, he's pretty far ahead of Charles. So I just don't think that fight makes a ton of sense unless it's like, boy, we need a main event real fast. Max, will you do it for extra X amount of dollars? Sure. But I don't know. If Max had lost to Justin Gaethje, those two guys fighting each other would have made all the sense in the world. I would have been totally down for that fight. But Charles lost. Max won. He's the talk of the town right now. And really, whatever Max wants right now. Max has the ability to put himself as – he's legit – could his next fight could be for the lightweight title if he wants it. You know what I'm saying? So But Topuria is a huge fight. It's one of the biggest fights the UFC can make right now. And as much as Volkanovski deserves a rematch, I think the UFC will probably go forward with that one if that's what both guys want. Just kind of depends on the timeline at this point. Because if like Topuria is ready to go in August or something, I would still like to see Volk take a little bit of extra time after getting brutally KO'd twice in 4 months. So, and then Volk can fight the winner of that fight at the end of the year or early next year, which is fine. That's totally fine. Plus, like, Holloway could just, like, if Connor beats Michael Chandler, like, Connor versus Max for the BMF title is huge. That's a huge fight. So, we'll see how it all plays out. It's kind of Max's world right now. I don't think he's going to go for the lightweight title. I would like to see him fight Islam Makhachev. I think that'd be super interesting. But I would honestly would like to see – we'll see Poirier get his go, and then I would like to see Armin Sarukian get his shot. I think he has earned it. And I want to see what Armin Sarukian on a full camp against Islam Makhachev looks like, because their first fight was not on a full camp, and Sarukian had a tremendous accounting of himself at like 23 years of age in his UFC debut. So that's of all the fights like I really want to see right now, Islam versus Armin too is absolutely at the top of the list. So. Yeah, Max got a lot of options. I don't think Charles Oliveira is, at least right this second, one of them. If he goes and fights Ilya and gets knocked out and loses, then cool. Then we can do that. We can do fun fights with Max. I'm fine with that. But right now, it doesn't make any sense. Let's go to Four Corner Sports.
Hey, Mike. So I wanted to talk about how the Justin Gaethje Holloway fight and then the main event that happened at UFC 300. I listened to Hanato Moicano's podcast that he does with Gilbert Burns, and I believe it was the host, and Gilbert Burns said something that they feel like Justin Gaethje is gonna be, you know, taking at least like the rest of the year off, because it takes about like 9 months to fully recover from that shattered nose. And I felt like that whole fight, you know, ended up going sideways for Gaethje ever since that spinning heel kick towards the bridge of the nose. I don't know. Do you feel like Gaethje is going to be taking a full year off? Because I would fully recommend that he does, especially after getting KO'd in that fashion. It almost felt like the way that Manuel Marquez knocked out Manny Pacquiao when Manny Pacquiao went to sleep face first. That is sort of the same reaction that I had when Holloway ended up putting Gaethje to sleep. I agree with you. I feel like Holloway has the options. I would like to see Volk take some time off, but for the main event that happened at UFC 300, do you felt like Jamahal Hill rushed himself? And I know that fight announcements had came out a couple days ago that Hill's going to be fighting Khalil Roundtree. I don't like that for Hill. I feel like he's rushing too soon. I think that Khalil could really, you know, put him out, you know, maybe a little more violently than the way that Pereira did. I just feel like Khalil Roundtree is not the type of person I would try to rush back to after just getting KO'd over by Alex Pereira. So I don't know what's your thoughts. Thanks.
Yeah, I didn't really see that one coming, but we'll see. I mean, look, credit to Jamahal Hill. He wants to get back on the horse, and boy, does he get a tough one ahead of him. Khalil Roundtree has just looked spectacular. So who knows? Maybe Jamal's just going to wrestle him for 15 minutes. I don't know. Hopefully he has a better game plan against Khalil Roundtree than he did against Alex Pereira, because that was something. That was certainly a choice to be made to have a range kickboxing match with probably the best in the world at that exact thing. But hey, credit to Jamahal Hill. I thought he was the MVP of fight week, building intrigue around that fight, made it more interesting for sure. And now he's getting right back on the horse. I saw a lot of people like complaining about it, being like, oh, no medical suspension. I mean, it's 2.5 months. So he probably got 30 days for a quick knockout and then he'll be fine. So dude wants to get back after it. Let him get back after it. And then Yeah, obviously the nose-shattering kick from Max Holloway was a game changer in the fight. Gaethje couldn't really breathe. He was breathing out of his mouth the rest of the fight. But let's not forget, Max won that first round anyways. Like, that was just icing on the cake. Max won that round. And it certainly paid dividends the rest of the fight because Max was clearly the fresher guy. And to me, from Jump Street, from the booking of the fight, the amount of people who just thought Max Holloway was going to get run over by Justin Gaethje was mesmerizing. I was stunned. I was stunned. If you listen to our reaction podcast, we were like, yes, this is our everything. This fight's super competitive. And I know Shaheen was a little trepidatious because, you know, Max is the beloved guy and he's always in fun fights. And when you fight a guy like Justin Gaethje, he ruins careers for the most part. Guys are just never the same. So I understood it from that point of view, like, man, if Justin has a really good night, are we still going to get the same Max? Or is he just going to be a shell of himself like most guys who share the octagon with Justin Gaethje? But the amount of people in the media space, they were like, oh my God, Max Holloway, why would you do such a thing? You're just going to get waxed up by Justin Gaethje. I couldn't believe it. Like, do you not watch MMA? Like, what are we talking about here? Max stylistically was a great matchup for Justin Gaethje. I wanted to pick him. I couldn't exactly get there because of what I learned in the Poirier fight, but people always talk about like that, oh, Dustin Poirier killed him. No, he didn't. That fight was really competitive. You could definitely see Poirier's size play a little bit of a factor because when he hit Holloway, like you could see it have just a little bit more effect, but it's not like Holloway didn't land anything back. Go rewatch that fight. It was very competitive. And Max obviously learned a lot from that. It was, what, 4 years prior? Dude put on some size. He looked like a freaking lightweight at UFC 300. And he looked damn good. So I cashed a Max Holloway plus money ticket. I didn't pick him to win, but I took the points. It was very smart. Might have been my best bet of the year. Might have been my most confident bet of the year. I was pretty exposed on that one. So I think Max silenced a lot of people there. And yeah, I think if the nose break doesn't happen, it wouldn't have changed my pick at all. I still think Holloway would have been competitive. And yeah, dude fought his ass off. That was an incredible performance. I know it's a lot about the knockout, but it was the performance in general. He beat the hell out of Justin Gaethje. He made Justin Gaethje question himself, which you never see. You never, ever see that. That's a testament to what Max Holloway brought to the table at UFC 300. Left lane, go ahead.
What's up, Mike? Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Well, I was going to ask about this card this weekend, but I'll save that for Friday because I've got more to talk about from 300. First of all, I listened to the – I know you weren't on the panel, but one of the people that was, AK, I see him here. He's here. He was on the panel, and I messaged him on Instagram, and I said this. So I don't really have an issue with anything he said on the ranking show, but I guess I wanted to say my piece because Jed and I think it was Damon, I think he was on there, I think it was Jed and Damon, both of them and so many other people, I hate the inconsistency that especially those two have, because these guys were talking about Diego Lopez and Jed quote for quote said, I don't know why these wins or these like beating these opponents is generating this kind of love. And he's obviously talking about first round finish wins against Gavin Tucker, Pat Sabatini, and Sadiq Youssef. But then like 20 minutes earlier, or like 10 minutes earlier, these guys, I think AK asked, are you confident that do you think Bo Nickel will be a future champion? And they're just immediately like, yes, yes, yesing. And I'm sorry, just because you were an elite NCAA wrestler, that is like the only thing that is, in my opinion, that's the only reason why they are just like, yep, he's a future champion. Mark it down. It's already happened. We're just waiting for it to happen. Because how are you going to say that, how are these wins generating love? And then Bo Nickel beating Jamie Pickett, Val Woodburn, and Cody Brundage, that's supposed to generate love when he, in my opinion, is doing it less impressively in just the octagon. Now, I know, obviously, Bo Nickel's got the further pedigree outside of the cage than Diego Lopez did, obviously coming into the UFC. But like, either let's just go full steam ahead and just hype up every prospect who's getting round one finishes, or just pump the brakes on everyone. Because why are we saying, yeah, Bo Nickel future champion? And then stuff like Makhayev, I think people are kind of waking up to him now, but he was a minus 600 favorite going into the Tim Elliott fight. Like, why are we so urgent? And I think it's a thing with these wrestlers, in my opinion. It's the same thing. I think it's very consistent with a lot of these wrestlers. Makhayev, Bo Nickel. Not saying they shouldn't be big favorites. Obviously, I'm not saying Bo Nickel shouldn't be a minus 2,000 favorite. But, like, Makhayev being a minus 600 against a top 10 fighter was down 2-0 going into the third. Like, who are we pumping the brakes on here? Because I don't know why it was just so immediate to say, like, no, I don't see it with Lopez. Like, I mean, that's your opinion. That's cool. But personally, I think he's maybe not a future champion, but I think he said not even a future title challenger, which I think is just shutting the door kind of unreasonably. But he was one of my favorite performances on the card. Another one of my favorite performances, even though he didn't win, was Alexander Rakic. Because I think even though he came away with a loss there, Jiří kind of just took over later on. I think Rakic still made a pretty good account of himself, because coming back, I think people don't realize that's almost 2 years since he fought, because his last fight was, I'm pretty sure, May of 2022 against Blachowicz when he did his leg. And he came back and he was absolutely tuning up Jiří. And it might seem like a dumb thing to say, obviously, because one of them won and one of them lost. But it's pretty clear, if you just using the eye test, cut that fight off before that tide turned for Jiří. I know it's a dumb thing to do, but like, just in terms of that first round, Rakic did miles better than Alex Pereira in the first round, in my opinion. And not saying he's better than Alex Pereira, of course, but I think we got to give a bit of credit to Rakic, because I think he looked like one of the better strikers in that division for the first round, until he kind of just couldn't hurt Jiří and realized that it's kind of hard to just continuously throw output at someone who can't get knocked down. So I think give some credit to Rakic. If people are shitting on him for the loss, I'm not saying anyone here is, but I've heard some people saying he's like was a quitter and stuff, and that he couldn't handle adversity. Like, come on, bro. It's Jiří. He's crazy. But yeah, give some credit to Rakic and Jed. Jed and Damon, give some more credit to Lopez. And let's just pump the brakes on Bo Nickel and not write it into the history books that he's already a champion. That's my take. Thank you.
All right. A lot to unpack there. Yeah, Rakic looked good. It's hard to beat someone that you can't kill. And Rakic hit Jiří with everything he had. Leg kicks, punches, everything. And he had zero effect on Jiří. Like, just zero. I mean, we could see Yuri's leg all banged up. He was moving around, but, like, he didn't really switch stances at all. Like, he was just like, yeah, keep kicking me in the leg. I like it. And that just messes with your mind when you're landing your best shots and you're landing it at 100% and you cannot affect this person. You cannot slow this person down at all. And Jiří is a psychopath. Sometimes you just got to be a crazy person. Sometimes you just got to be a crazy person, and Jiří is that crazy person. So let's talk about the ranking show. I listened to the ranking show. I understand where you're coming from. There are a couple things that we need to put into perspective. One, the Bo Nickel thing. Damon was, from what I recall, Damon was like absolutely unequivocally he will be champion. Jed, who was kind of on that boat for a while, suddenly was like, yes, I feel like he'll still be champion, but it's not like a matter of fact anymore. So I think like he did sort of pump the brakes on Bo, even though he did eventually land on, yes, he'll be champion, but he's not really as confident as he may have been before the Cody Brownage fight or even before that. The other thing I'll say about the Diego Lopez thing, and this is important because I know this is part of the conversation as well. As much as I have put over the middleweight division, as much as I think that as of right this second, in terms of intrigue and names and the top of it and some of the fights you could put together, it is one of the top three divisions in the UFC right now in 2024, just because of the names that are there. But let's not kid ourselves. What division is deeper, featherweight or middleweight? It is featherweight by a mile. It's not even close. Like, you could, Bo Nickel is such an intriguing player right now that if you put him, if the UFC booked Bo Nickel versus Dricus du Plessis right now, if they booked that fight and they said this is going to be the main event of the July pay-per-view, there are going to be people that are going to believe that Bo Nickel is going to win that fight. That at least, and even if you don't, there are people who are going to think, you know what? If he gets takedowns, like, he might win the belt. If they book Diego Lopez versus Ilya Topuria right now, I don't think you get that same reaction, is what I'm trying to say. Featherweight's just a murderer's row. Look at what they did with Alex Pereira. Look at how Alex Pereira bounced his way up to Israel Adesanya. Andreas Mikulaitis, who was maybe the lowest ranked middleweight in the last 5 years, to Bruno Silva, which was a tough fight, but you kind of needed that one. Then he gets Sean Strickland, obviously a win that has aged very, very well. And then he got the Izzy fight. Four fights already in there. You could do that at middleweight. I don't think you could do that at featherweight. We just talked about Aljamain Sterling, former bantamweight champion. In a lot of people's eyes, the greatest bantamweight of all time, because of the title runs, the win streak before the Sean O'Malley loss, etc. A lot of people felt that way. He goes out and pitches a shutout against Calvin Kattar. Calvin did nothing against this guy. And we're not talking about him just getting a title shot. When if this is like the PFL or Bellator, he probably would get one. He's not going to get one in the UFC. We're talking about he's going to have to fight Mobzar and then maybe one other guy before he gets a title shot. I think that's a big part of this conversation. Like, Diego is good. Like, I've been super high on Diego Lopez. I've been trying to get, remember when before Josh Emmett stepped in and fought Bryce Mitchell, I was like, dude, let's get Diego in there. Or before, when Josh Emmett lost his opponent before Bryce Mitchell stepped in, I was like, let's get Diego in that. Let's get Diego that fight. Let's get Diego that fight. I think he's a character. I think he's very good. And who knows? He's 29. But if you're asking me if I'm more confident in Bo Nickel getting a title shot over Diego Lopez, the answer is yes. Because Bo's a guy, the UFC is going to build him appropriately. And I think there's doing it with Diego Lopez too. But like, if you match Diego, my on to the next one suggestion for Diego Lopez was Josh Emmett. Like, let's just go back to that well. Are you confident Diego Lopez beats Josh Emmett? I don't know. I mean, if he goes out there and rinses Josh Emmett, that shuts everybody up. And we're like, okay, now he got something here. But then, like, look at the guys he's going to have to fight after that. Yair, Ortega, Aljo, Mavzar, Volk, Holloway, Ilya. Like, that is just, that's a lot, man. That's a lot. And Diego's got mileage on him. He's got 30 pro fights. He's got 30 pro fights. So, I don't know. Like, I get what you're saying. But also, like, going back and listening to the ranking show, I think a lot of it had to do with just the depth of featherweight. And now, if the UFC wants to push Diego super quick to a title shot, they can certainly do that. They've done it before with other fighters. But even a guy like Ilya Topuria, who we knew with Ilya Topuria, from like minute one, even like those who were watching Ilya Topuria before he got in the UFC, we knew how good this guy was. We knew immediately what this guy was capable of. We knew this guy was probably fighting for a title sooner rather than later. And it took him six fights to get a title shot. Could Diego be that way too? Sure. But look at what's in front of Ilya right now. Holloway and or Volk. Volk and or Holloway. Mavzar. I mean, it's just a tough division to get there, especially when you have a guy like Ilya who is just a freak and is only going to get better at the top of that division right now, who's only 27. So I think that was more of... And Damon will tell you right away. He's a big wrestling guy. But... I get where you're coming from. I have to defend my boys a little bit, but I think a lot of I know a chunk of that had to do with the divisions that they are both in, more so than the talent. Diego's doing a lot, man. He's doing a lot. But let's see how they book him moving forward. I know he wants a Mavzar rematch. I don't want to see that right now. Thomas, go ahead.
Mike and Mr. there for a week. Couple of questions, really. First one being, where do you think the winner of the main event at the weekend goes? Do you think it pushes them up towards top five title shot, that kind of area of the flyweight division? And secondly, personally, I was quite disappointed. Paul Hughes went to PFL and didn't go to the UFC. I don't think the UFC tabled a good offer to bring him over. What's your opinion?
They weren't going to. I mean, we all knew that. We all knew that. If you listen to Pete Carroll, kind of tell the story about how Paul Hughes was offered fights for the UFC. I think he was offered to fight somebody on one of the UK cards, but he was hurt and he couldn't take it. Then they offered him, I think, a contender series spot, like maybe a month later, but he was too hurt and couldn't take it. And they just kind of, I don't think they gave up on him, but I think it kind of hurt Paul when it came to the negotiations, et cetera. So PFL was to me, if someone had asked me, Mike, put $100 on who Paul Hughes signs with, I would have put it on the PFL in a second. PFL is bad at most things, but what they are good at is spending money. They have money to spend, and they will overpay people. Look, I mean, they are AEW right now to the UFC's WWE. They think they're a competitor, but they're nowhere close to them. The product on screen is not as good, and it shows. The booking is awful. I mean, just look at what they just announced, the Mohegan Sun card. And it's the same issue that I went back to after the first round of the whole thing when it came to the women's flyweights. You got Liz Carmouche, who is, you can make a case that she's like the third best flyweight on planet Earth in that division. And she has to fight Juliana Velasquez. And now she has to fight Kana Watanabe in her second regular season fight. While on the flip side, Dakota Dicheva, who is going to be a star for them, they just basically line her up with the two easiest fighters in the tournament. So like Liz Carmouche could go and win both fights and not make the playoffs because of how the matchups are made. And then just go and look and see what like Daniel James has been saying. Go look at what some of the other fighters have been saying. It's clear what PFL is doing, and it's a problem, and people are starting to realize it now. And Paul Hughes is going to go in there, that PFL is going to treat Paul Hughes the same way. They're going to push him like a star. They're going to give him more favorable matchups than other people in his division just to get him there, mostly so they could say, look, this is the set. And they already did this. I knew as soon as he signed, Don Davis was going to come out with the tweet, the best free agent in the world. The most regarded free agent in the world chose the PFL over the UFC. There's a reason for that. And that's exactly what Don Davis tweeted. It's exactly what he tweeted. Money solves a lot of problems. PFL's got a ton of problems. I mean, a ton. But they have money to fling around, and they can sign these people. They can sign the Paul Hughes's of the world. The UFC wasn't going to offer him like 100 and 100 out the gate. There's no chance. There's no chance. But let's see how Paul Hughes does with this first contract. He'll go through the first season. And let's see if he still feels the same way. PFL is still willing to pay him that kind of money. I mean, we saw Kayla Harris in the face of their company. She sprinted out of there. Sprinted to the UFC. So, yeah, good signing, but not surprised by it. And Paul Hughes, considering where PFL and where Bellator kind of plants their flags in Europe, it's a no-brainer. It's an absolute no-brainer. They do their best business in Europe. The UFC does their best business everywhere. So, yeah, good for him. Good for Paul. CV, go ahead.
Hey, Mike. Good morning. Glad to have you back. So now that we got McGregor, you know, they have a date now set for June against Chandler. I think, like, the next, like, big fighter we anticipate to come back is hopefully John Jones. Do you have any, like, predictions on when you think we'll see him? Maybe at MSG? I certainly don't think they'll run back the Stipe fight. But, yeah, who do you think John will fight if he does fight at the end of the year?
He's going to fight Stipe at the end of the year. That's the fight. They're going to make it. They've gone this far. I mean, you have to push it over the finish line now. Could be the final fight for both of them. So, yeah. John's not going to fight Tom Aspinall. Like, he's so far into the Stipe thing, he's just got to do it. And the UFC is so far into it that they just kind of have to pull the trigger on it. But I think we're at the point where it's like, this is your last chance. So, yeah, I think John Jones, they'll try to go back to MSG with that fight. It's a big-ass fight. It's a big-ass fight. Hardcores won't give a shit. Because I think we all kind of know how that's going to go. It'll be the final fight of Stipe's career, more than likely. And then we go from there. But John's also dealing with some of the shit behind the scenes, too. We'll see how far that all plays out. But, yeah. He's got to fight Stipe, guys. Like, just as I told you last year, let's just all live in this world. We just have to accept it. This is what we're getting. John Jones, Tom Aspinall ain't happening. Tommy Aspinall is going to do his own thing. There's going to be two heavyweight titles. Tom will defend his. John will defend his. And then hopefully these two, their paths align. But John is fighting Stipe, I'm sure. That would be my guess, and I would put good money on it. Abzwalia, go ahead.
So, Mark, heck of a morning. It's been a while. Hope you've had a great long break, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, my friend.
All right. So, firstly, I enjoy UFC 300. I really, really loved the fact they went back to some of the old school tell the tape music. The, you know, the way they introduced the gladiator, that took, you know, that really took me back to memories from, you know, watching this from a very young age. You know, overall, amazing event. I would say it's a 10 out of 10. I really wish the UFC did more of this. I think it makes the event kind of really unique in its own way. You know, I know this was just for this particular special event. So, all right, now my questions. Firstly, regarding Davison Figueiredo, he says he wants to fight Dominic Cruz. Look, I think that's a great fight, but I don't really want to see him fight Cruz for obvious reasons. I think he should be fighting up. I would love to see him get tested with, you know, a Marlon Vera or you know, Piotr Jan. I think that really can thread his waters. Maybe even a Song Yadong. You know, that like we. I really want to see him prove himself that he actually belongs in this division, and he didn't just get wins over guys who have had multiple losses over the last 3-4 years of their career. You know, like Rob Font win is fine. It's a decent win, but it's not a good win in my opinion. Same with Cody Garbrandt. You know, even though he looked a little bit sharp in that fight, he's definitely not the guy he once was, and at best, Cody's a gatekeeper. Another question I have is, what's next for Charles Oliveira's career? Because I feel he's now in the limbo. He probably could still fight for the title one last time if he beats maybe, say, Gamrot, maybe one other guy. You know, maybe a rematch with Arman or I don't know, whoever he matches up with. But then he's kind of been like, in my opinion, I think it would be the same situation that Dustin Poirier is in right now, where he can get a title shot off a lucky chance that right time, right availability. For me, as a fan, I would love to see him move up to welterweight, fight Kamaru Usman or someone in that top three. I know he might not win or do well, but I would love to actually see how well he fares in that division, because he weighs quite a lot for a lightweight, and I think he could make welterweight. He could be a good build for welterweight, in my opinion. Yeah, that's really all I have, man. Have a good day.
No, I don't want to see Charles Oliveira welterweight. No. No, he was getting chucked around by Islam at 155. Like, he's going to have a tough time with those guys. He's going to be – it's going to be tough. So, no. Like, Wonder – like, even guys like Wonder Boy. Wonder Boy's like 200 pounds cutting down to 170. Like, he's – no. There's fights for him at 155. Let's keep him there. You know, if Holloway loses a fight, you can always go back to that one. It's just – I mean, this is what we need to do. What can we do? I mean, I think the Gaethje rematch is there. You could do Gamrot. That's fine. Charles Oliveira versus Rafael Fiziev would be frigging incredible. There's just lots of fun things we could do. Boicano at down the line. Benoit Saint-Denis. I mean, there's just lots of options. Lots of options for Charles Oliveira. Figgy, I think Figgy beats Cheeto. Like, I really do. I think he beats him. And to say the Rob Font win wasn't a good one, I don't necessarily agree with that. So, but Cheeto's fine. He's not going to fight Song Yudong. Song's coming off of a loss. Yeah, it's kind of where he's at right now. It's kind of where he's at. Okay, I think we're done here. I don't know what just happened. Wait a minute. There we go. All right, we'll get Barbarossa in here, and then we'll wrap up. I don't know what just happened. I don't know if I lost connection or what. I don't know. All right, people are getting back in. I don't know what the hell just happened. Someone tried to call me, and I just X'd them out. All right, now people are coming back in. Ani, you're not even requested, so I don't know why you're waving. I'm trying to get you in, Barbarossa. I don't know what's going on. I'm getting the Wheel of Doom. Yeah. Figgy Rob Font, or not Rob Font, Figgy Piotr Jan would be the fight, but Jan is hurt. Jan's going to be out for a hot minute. So it's kind of like unfair to even book him right now. But we'll see. Figgy Cruz is fine. Former champion. Why not? David, go ahead. Yeah, try again. Connection did not go through for some reason. Let's try again. Please, for the love of God, work. All right, do we have you now?
You got me, Mike?
Yes, we got you.
All right, hell, we made it, buddy.
We made it.
What's up, Bubba? All right. What's your take on Aldo Martinez at 301? Leg kick battle, I think, is going to be intriguing. Would love Aldo to look good in Brazil, but just got this weird feeling that silence behind the violence will get a decision win and kind of style on him and Rio. So mythical fighter of the week, the version of Cornero Francis that took out Anthony Hamilton via power Kimura. That man was a motherfucker. MMA mailman out.
Oops, didn't mean to do that. I actually was that was the first event I ever covered, was Francis Ngannou submitting Anthony Hamilton in good old Albany, New York. A Derek Lewis headline fight night card. How about that? Against Shamil Abdurahimov. Yes. We even had those main events back then in 2016. What a time. What a time indeed. Let me think here. God, I forgot. David, get back in here. Get back in here. I'm a moron. And I forgot your entire question, like an idiot. Save, like, we're knocking the rust off, or leave it in the comments, or somebody. It's gonna hit me in like 2 minutes, anyways. All right. My bad. Go ahead. Oh no! I got it. Jose Aldo versus Jonathan Martinez. See, I knew it would hit me. I knew it would hit me. People, I think Jose Aldo's got to beat him. Jonathan Martinez is a fine fighter. He's good. He is the silence behind the violence. I'm glad to see the nickname is growing. The moniker is growing. He's Jose fucking Aldo, man. He's Jose fucking Aldo. What does Jose Aldo do to leg kickers? He kicks them harder and better. Ask Pedro Munhoz what fighting Jose Aldo was like. It was not a fun time for him. It was a tough time. And I liked Jonathan Martinez. This would be a gigantic win for him. I don't know. I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. Jose in Brazil, it's a free agent fight for him. Like, it's basically a contract fight. I don't think he's going to stick with the UFC unless the UFC comes back with a floppity jillion dollars for him. But, I mean, I think this is more of like a Jose Aldo fight than a Jonathan Martinez fight. I just think they wanted to have Jose on the card, and because they knew they needed to spice it up. Jonathan was available, ready to go to Brazil, so here we go. But I'm picking Jose Aldo to win that fight. I think he will out-leg kick Jonathan Martinez, and I think he will win a decision. But Jonathan beats him. Good on him, man. Good on him. Man, 301's coming quick. And it is it is certainly a pay-per-view card that is going to happen in Brazil. Let's take a gander at this. Pantoja versus Stevie Vincenzo Ursig. Vinny Siggs. Jonathan Martinez versus Jose Aldo. Paul Craig versus Caio Baraglio. Anthony Smith versus Vitor Petrino. Michelle Pereira versus Ihor Potieria. Did you guys see when they announced the Ihor thing that the plan is to have him fight this fight and the one he was already booked with Shara Bullitt a month and a half later in Saudi Arabia? That's pretty fun. Joaquim Silva versus Dracar Close. Man, no disrespect to Joaquim Silva, but what does Dracar Close got to do to like get a fight with like a relevant guy at 155? Again, I'm not trying to like shit on Joaquim Silva, but like, can we get Dracar Close a guy like in the top 20? What else does this man have to do? Joe Anderson Brito versus Jack Shore. Elvis Brenner versus Mick DeBeck Oralby. Fucking rules. That fight's incredible. This is going to be a fun watch, guys. I think it's going to be a fun card. But there's just no names, really. Like, there's names, like, people you know, but they're not, like, big draws. Not a ton of storyline outside of, like, the top two or three fights. We're going to watch it. We're going to do a watch party for it. But, yeah, I think we're going to be looking to move on quickly to 302 and 303. Kowloon City, take us home.
Like, I know we all love Dustin. I just don't see – break down, what is his path to victory? Does he have anything more than a puncher's chance against Islam? I think Islam's the best in the world. Love both of them. I would love to see Dustin cap off the career, man. It'd be cool, but I'm just trying to chop up a way this fight goes down, and I do not see a path to victory for him. I just want to get your thoughts. Thanks, dude.
I don't know, man. It's a horrible matchup for Dustin. It's a horrible fight for him. He does not have great takedown defense, and he's fighting the best grappler in the division, the best wrestler in the division, a guy that will take him down a million times if he wants to. I think it's just a matter of like destiny, and you know, I think Dustin's the better boxer, probably the better striker overall. Although Islam, I think, is incredibly underrated in that aspect, and he's shown that in his last couple of fights. We'll see. There weren't a lot of people out there confident that Dustin Poirier was going to beat Benoit Saint-Denis, and boy, did he. But Jesus, can you think of a better story in MMA than Dustin Poirier winning the lightweight title against Islam Makhachev? Like, that would be insane. That would be insane. I don't think it's going to go very well for him, but it's a big-ass fight. It's going to do well on pay-per-view. Islam's a star. Dustin's a star. Sean Strickland's a star. Paulo Costa's a star. That is going to do pretty damn well on pay-per-view. So, yeah, big opportunity. It'll be the last chance for Dustin Poirier to get a title shot. And let's see if he can – I mean, it'd be very pro-wrestling if Dustin Poirier can get it done and win the undisputed title. Be pretty wild. But then he's going to fight Armin Sarukian, a little teammate versus teammate action. So, yeah. But, yeah, I don't love his chances. Do not love his chances in that fight. All right. I think we are done here. Thank you all very much. Appreciate you all. It's good to be back. We're going to be recording something later on today that I'm very excited about. I know a lot of people who have been longtime listeners to the podcast network. If you think of the time of year that we are currently in right now, what is going on in the world of major sports? Something big's happening in the NFL, which means something big's going to happen over the MMA Fighting Podcasting Network. And we've done a couple of these. We're going to do another one. I'll leave it that vague for now. But we're going to record that later today. I am excited. I know the crew is excited. We look forward to this every year, and we're going to record it later on today. So thank you all very much. We appreciate you. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll do it again. Have a great Tuesday, and have a heck of a morning, everybody.
Listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.